Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for listening. The number is 888-914-9149. Chances are you've got that on speed dial. 888-914-9149. I thought you might enjoy this. Courtesy of Libs of TikTok. As if Twitter wasn't biased enough toward the left now has its own new alternative to Twitter and Facebook called Tribal Social. T-R-I-B-E-L. Tribel. Tribal Social is what it's called.
Well, isn't that special?
Yeah. According to Tribal's Twitter bio, the platform is, quote, an innovative Twitter-Facebook alternative that's free of hate, fake news, and bots. In other words, it's a platform to shield the fragile left. This is how it's being described in this news article here. To shield the fragile left from pain caused by cognitive dissonance. And the author of the article says, I came across a tweet from October 17th claiming that the platform doesn't censor any posts. The algorithms simply filter out fake news, bigotry, and hostility. And so this person says, I thought this was a great opportunity to put their claim to the test. I opened an account, not me, Patrick Madrid, but the person who wrote this. I opened an account and posted a few messages. The first reading, men cannot get pregnant. Others included, men cannot become women and women cannot become men.
Fact.
Immediately, the Ministry of Truth went into overdrive. Tribal users began reporting and even misgendering me. In less than 20 minutes, my account was suspended and I was banned from the platform. Tribal posted statements categorizing me as racist, transphobic, and bigoted. So that's their commitment to...
They were canceled in 20 minutes?
20 minutes.
Whoa, it's going to be some kind of a record.
Why don't you try to beat it, Cyrus?
No, I'm okay.
I'd love to see how fast you would get banned there. They probably already know my name, so they probably wouldn't even let me sign up.
Yeah, you can't even sign up for an account.
Yeah. I'm sorry. You're not approved. Anyway, so there's an example. If you don't have good arguments and you know that, typically the thing to do is to try to silence your opponent. So anyway, I thought you might find that interesting. 888-914-9149. Let's start off with Leo now in Chandler, Arizona. Good morning, Leo. You are first up, sir.
Good morning, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
Thank you for all you do for the Catholic Church and bringing the true faith to light.
Thank you.
I've read a lot of your books, and they're awesome. But the question I have is salvation only through the Catholic Church? I was brought up believing this. And I believe it, but is it in the scriptures?
Yeah, it is. It's not said in exactly those words, but first let's just say that the Catholic Church has a dogma known as no salvation outside the church. Sometimes you'll hear the Latin formula, extra ecclesiam nulla salus, which is no salvation outside the church. And it is to be understood correctly, it has to be understood with two truths in mind. Number one is, as Jesus himself said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. So there he's proclaiming his own exclusivity as Savior. There is no other door to heaven other than through Jesus. And he also said in Matthew chapter 28, this is in verse 19 and 20, we know this is the Great Commission. And he says to the apostles to go into the whole world, make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I've commanded you. And behold, I'm with you always, even until the end of the age. So we see in these two verses, first of all, and there are others that we could adduce, but let's just look at these two, that he's number one saying that he himself is the only path to salvation, faith in Jesus. And the second part of that is that he has established a church that he wants literally everybody in all places at all times to come into. And this is through, as the church refers to it in a document called Lumen Gentium, and that's Latin for a light under the people, referring to Jesus. It's the dogmatic constitution on the church from Vatican II. And I'll come to that again in just a moment, but it uses the analogy of baptism as a doorway. So Jesus here is saying, not only is he himself exclusive, but this church that he has established, he would like everybody, he wants everybody to be in this church. So this is a standing command to the apostles, and by extension to the church herself, to evangelize everywhere and everybody. The reason is because our belief is that Jesus wants everybody to come into the Catholic Church. And that, of course, is predicated upon my assertion that the church that Jesus established is the Catholic Church. So I'm just giving you some of the presuppositions that are involved here. So that is the first big component, I guess you could say. And Lumen Gentium in section 14 reiterates this age-old teaching about no salvation outside the church and says, after some preamble, that anyone who knows that Jesus is our only Savior and by extension also knows that the Catholic Church, the church he established, is necessary for salvation, and yet knowing this refuses either to remain in the church, in the case of Catholics who abandon the church, or to come into the church, in the case of those who are not Catholic, but they recognize that this is the truth, and yet they refuse to go into this church, that these people cannot be saved. So that's a somewhat clunky way of expressing that issue of no salvation outside the church. And you can read this for yourself. It's online, readily available in just about any language. Just look up Lumen Gentium and then read all of it if you have the time to do so, but certainly zero in on section 14 because that's where this is spelled out in detail. Now, the second part of this two-part answer is, it's found in 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 4, where it says that God wills all men to be saved and to come to a knowledge of the truth. Now, we can't exclude this from the answer about is the church necessary for salvation? The answer is yes, but it has to be understood against the backdrop of God's love for all of us, his love for the world. As Jesus said, for God so loved the world that he gave his only son, that whoever would believe in him would not perish but have eternal life. So the reason that's important is to recognize that if in the case of somebody who doesn't know and it's not his own fault, there must be some way that that person could be saved in a way that has not been revealed to us. The normative way has been revealed to us by Jesus. But what about all those people who, for some reason that is not their own fault, they're not able to know about Jesus, or they're not able to know about the Catholic Church? And there could be many different scenarios you could imagine about that. What about them? So looking at passages like 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 4, if God wills that all men be saved and come to a knowledge of the truth, it must at least be possible for all men to be saved. It doesn't mean all men will be saved. It just means it must be possible. Otherwise, you have an impossible situation where God is willing something that can't happen, and that would be contrary to his nature. So we can deduce from that statement and others like it that because God indeed loves the world, and he is sovereign, he's not bound by the laws and the rules that we are bound by as followers of Jesus Christ. So he's free to do as he wishes with his love. And so the church also says, therefore, that if there are those who through no fault of their own did not choose to enter into the Catholic Church because they didn't know about it or there was something that blocked them, that yes, they too could be saved. We don't say they are saved, but they could be saved. And that's something known only to God and to that person. It hasn't been revealed to us. So that's where we entrust people to the mercy of God. Now, I realize that that is somewhat of a long answer to your question, but this is an answer that requires some explanation. Because if you just say, well, yes or no, it doesn't really tell the whole story. You see what I mean, Leo?
No, that's perfect. Thank you. I really agree with what you're saying. I'm trying to get some of my friends that are non-denominational Christians. You know, they always say that, if you just accept the Lord and Savior as your Christ, then, you know, you're saved. And I was like, yeah, I'm not sure. I said, I think what I always believed was that through the Catholic Church, since that is God's pilgrim church, you know, you accept all these other things, but yet you're denying his Pilgrim Church. So that's where I was having an issue with, and I just wanted mm-hmm. to clarify that with you, and you clarified it through me. So I know, I'm a cradle Catholic. I was brought up in the church, and mm-hmm. I'm getting to know the scriptures listening to you over these few years. So thank you for all that you do for us Catholics.
Oh, you're most welcome. And I'd like to recommend a book to you that I think you'll find very helpful. It's by Steve Wood. And I don't know if you are familiar with him. He's a former evangelical Protestant. In fact, he was very involved with Calvary Chapel for some time. But many, many years ago, he became Catholic. And he wrote, among other books that he's written that are very good, he wrote a book that you should take a look at. It's called Grace and Justification. Let's see, we've got a lot of background noise there. So the book is called Grace and Justification, An Evangelical's Guide to Catholic Beliefs. And so it's an explanation of all of these issues. So justification, salvation, all of the things that are surrounding this issue. And I would suggest if you get this book and read it and learn the material that's in there, and also perhaps even share that with your friends, I have a feeling that you're going to have a much better success rate in helping them understand really what the Catholic Church teaches. And also why this notion that if you just say, I believe in Jesus, you know, because they're quoting scripture where it says, what must I do to be saved? The Philippian jailer says this, and St. Paul says, you know, believe in your heart and confess with your mouth that Jesus is the Christ, the Lord, and you will be saved. You can ask your evangelical friends this question. Well, what about Mormons? Mormons do exactly that. And they will say, I believe in my heart that Jesus is Lord, and I believe, and I confess with my mouth. Does that mean that the Mormon is saved? And this will present a problem to them, because they will say, because they're adamantly opposed to Mormonism, so they will say, well, no, he's not saved because he doesn't understand God correctly. So your point then is, bingo bango. Just merely saying that, it's not like a magical incantation. And you'll notice that in the book of Acts, when St. Paul says this to the Philippian jailer, what is the very next thing that happens? He gets baptized. So, I mean, there's more to it than just merely saying these words. They're important, and the belief, of course, is of primary importance. But if they assert that this is all that's necessary, well, then bring up the question of a Mormon, or bring up Jehovah's Witnesses who deny the divinity of Christ. They deny the Trinity. And ask them the same thing. Jehovah's Witnesses will say this. They'll say, I do believe in my heart, and I do confess with my mouth that Jesus is the Lord. And yet, of course, they mean something very different by it than you and I do. Ask your Protestant friends, does that mean that the Jehovah's Witnesses are thereby saved? They're going to have to say no. Now, the reason you want to do this is to show them that it's not effective. It doesn't accomplish anything for them to just throw out a verse and say, well, you know, here's the magic formula. And I'm not saying that to denigrate in any way what St. Paul said. But what happens is these kind of like slogans can be used. And if that's all they're thinking that's necessary, it's easy to disprove that. And they themselves will have to admit it.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. Another thing is that your friend, Scott Hahn, I actually met him here at a men's retreat. And I know his story. And mm-hmm. I always said, man, you know, this man's a brilliant man. If he can go out and try to take Catholics out of the Catholic Church, like he said he was doing at one time, and convert over to Catholicism, there's something to that, you know. But anyway, so thank you anyways. But my second question was about the Holy Bible. This is another question that comes up all the time when I'm talking to my friends.
Okay.
The 73 books. If they don't have that 73 books, I don't consider that a Holy Bible. Am I wrong by saying that? Or what's your take on that, Patrick?
Well, if you're talking about, say, like a King James Bible or an NIV Bible, that's the Holy Bible, but it's missing seven books, the seven deuterocanonical books.
Right.
So it's not that it's somehow bad, it's just incomplete. Now, where you have a little bit of, you know, there's another part of all this we should keep in mind, and that is that some Protestant translations are tendentiously translated in a way, or even if it's not the translation per se, it can also be the footnotes, as a way to try to dissuade the reader from arriving at, let's just call them Catholic conclusions, and saying, you know, saying to the reader, here's what this means, not that, this. that's one of the dangers we have to be on guard against. So you want to make sure that you're reading a Bible that is approved by the Catholic Church for use among Catholics, and there are several of those available. So, yeah, those are books that are missing from the Bible, and there's a long controversy. If you're interested in that backstory, I would recommend a book by Gary Machuda called Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger, and he delves into the entire dispute, this polemic between Catholics and Protestants about those seven deuterocanonical books. So that can be another follow-up for you. Thank you. Appreciate that. Let's go now to Mike in Plain City, Ohio. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Patrick. I'm a first-time caller.
Well, welcome.
Thank you. You actually gave a speech here in Plain City many years ago, by the way. You gave a lecture. I unfortunately couldn't attend it, but I
was that at St. Joseph's Parish?
St. Joseph's, yeah.
I remember it well. I remember it well. In fact, I was out there multiple times, and the parish priest, his name is escaping me, very good man. He had me do something like a summer series of five or six talks over the course of the summer. But yeah, I do remember it. Sorry we didn't meet when I was out there.
So real quick question. It's a very simple one, too. Well, not simple. Does God test us? And if you could kind of expand on that a little bit, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. Yeah, well, let's take a look at Adam and Eve. There's the first test right there. So he gave Adam and Eve, and you know the story. You don't need me to explain it to you, but he gave them a test. They didn't pass it. That's why we have original sin. So starting from there, you know, there are countless examples of tests that God gave. He gave Abraham the test, told him to go sacrifice his only son, Isaac, whom he had waited for his whole life. He was an old, old man. When Isaac was born, the apple of his eye, his, you know, the most important person in his whole world, aside from his wife. And what does God say to him? Go sacrifice him. He gave him a test. And Abraham passed the test. He didn't have to sacrifice his son. And God, it wasn't that God needed to know what would happen. He already knew what would happen. It was for Abraham to know that he was that committed in faith to the Lord, that he would obey the Lord no matter what. Job was given the test. Read the book of Job, for example. The devil has a conversation with God saying, I bet I can crack that guy. And he says, okay, go for it. And he tries every trick in the book, and Job loses his children, his wife, his home, his health. He's reduced to just absolute abject misery. And he refuses to lose faith in God and to get angry with God. And so he passes the test. So there are three big ones, and I mean, plenty others besides, but those are examples. Is that what you're looking for, Mike? Is that what you mean by that?
Well, so this is where I'm struggling, okay? You gave several good examples. Abraham's one where I don't know that the devil was involved, but obviously in the garden, the devil was involved, right? And, and so in the case of Job, I guess I would say that God allows testing, right? Because God's not the author of evil. So right. God permits testing by the devil. But, you know, in the case of Abraham, I apologize. I don't remember exactly. I don't think the devil was involved, right? I think God basically asked Abraham, you know, right. So it was kind of a test of love, I guess, right? To God. So.
Yeah, for sure.
That's what I'm trying to understand. That's what I'm trying to grasp is the wording. When people say God tests, I don't know that I agree with that statement. I think he permits testing, but to say that he tests, I don't know that I agree with that. Would you say that that's the correct way to think about this?
Well,
that
I mean,
not
if
actually
I
actually testing us, that he's allowing testing.
Well, I'm not sure if I fully understand the nuance. Maybe I don't understand the nuance. I mean, I know that the Lord does test us, and those three examples, to my mind, are sort of, it's kind of a slam dunk. I mean, he does test us, but not for his own sake, because there's nothing he needs to find out. He already knows.
Right.
But you're right. He does allow us to be tested. He allows that, but he also, I mean, if you do a quick word search on the word test in the Bible. Here's one example, Proverbs 17:3. The crucible is for silver and the furnace is for gold, and the Lord tests hearts. And if there were time, We could go through and find plenty of those. Here's another one, Psalm 26, verse 2. Prove me, O Lord, and try me. Test my heart and my mind. Now, proving and testing are almost synonyms in that case. So in other words, I don't know if you're, if the nuance that you're applying to it is, if I'm answering your question adequately or not.
I think you are. I think you are. So in the Our Father, you know how we say deliver us from evil. We're asking God for help to I don't know if is it to pass the test or to take the test away from us, you know, and deliver us from evil.
Yeah, well, Jesus said to, to pray that you may not be put to the test. He tells the apostles to pray that you may not be put to the test. And I think by that, he's referring maybe most explicitly to his own passion. And he himself prayed that he would not be put to the test. As you know, he said in the garden, Father, you know, may this cup pass from me, but not my will, but thine be done. So testing in that sense, seems to me that he's referring to the test of endurance up to and including dying for the truth. I never want to be put to that test. I hope I never am. But if I am, and if you are, then we pray that God will give us the strength necessary.
Yep. Great, Patrick. I think you did answer it, though. Thank you. Okay. I really appreciate your help on that one.
Nice chatting with you, Mike. And I'm glad that you have the Relevant Radio app on your phone. Please tell all your friends in Central Ohio to get the Relevant Radio app on their phones, too. Thanks, Mike. I'll be right back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
I can't believe you're doing this. I can't believe you're doing this.
This is what you get. Yeah. Patrick Madrid texted me dark and early this morning with Yoko Ono screaming into a microphone, and he's like, "Wake up, sunshine!"
That was just for you.
Well, now I get to share it with everyone. Oh. Thanks, Patrick.
Oh, you're so generous, Cyrus.
Yeah, I'm a very nice guy.
Spreading the word. You should post that on Twitter just to let people see it. It's just so astonishing.
Awful. So awful. I'm sorry, everyone. I apologize.
And she takes it seriously. That's what's so amazing. Oh. Okay, well, I didn't see that coming, that's for sure. At first, I thought this is like the Haunted Mansion or something. Can you imagine waking up out of a deep sleep hearing that?
I basically did this morning.
In a dark bedroom. That's right.
Thanks to you, I basically did.
Ooh, okay. Let's put a red line through that rejoin. We don't want to play that one anymore. Oh, I think people are still quivering. All right, 888-914-9149. Let's go to Clint now in California. Hello, Clint.
Hello, Patrick. So my question I got for you is, what do you think about the neocatechumenal way? I got an idea of what you think. Okay. I'm not one that's inside of the neocatechumenal way, but I see the fruits that from a brother that I go to Mass with on Sunday, I see how it is very good for at least a 22-year-old and a lot of other people that are in the youth. I want to know, like, what do you think?
Yeah, no problem. Well, I really have no contact with them, and I've never been part of the neocatechumenal way. So I don't really have anything I can say with regard to that because I just don't know it. very well. But I am aware they have lots of children. They seem to be very open to life. They seem to be very faithful in the sacraments and teaching the faith. And so my impression of them is that they're very good, sincere, dedicated Catholics who love Jesus, and they're busy about building the kingdom. That's my impression.
Right, I agree. And I guess the reason why I asked that is, you know, he gives me a lot of talk on about the, I'm not too knowledgeable on my faith, but I'd say for a 24-year-old, I could very much defend myself in my argument. Okay. And say that, you know, the only reason why I got married is because of my faith, because I tell you, a lot of marriages, no one wants to get married at 24. So I could see how, you know, they do a very good job at instilling, like, you know, facts and truths and a lot of information that a lot of people that are Catholic don't know.
Mm-hmm. Except for those, of course, who listen to Relevant Radio. So those Catholics.
There you go.
Have a leg up, don't they? Like you.
Well, I guess so.
How long have you been married, Clint?
Seems interesting. I've been married for 5 months. 5 months, and we're already expecting twins.
Congratulations. May God grant you both many happy years. I'm happy for you, Clint. And it's nice talking to you. Thank you. Let's go to Jeff now in Austin. Good morning, Jeff.
Hi, Patrick.
Hi there.
I have a question about a friend who, a good friend who's been a faithful Catholic for years. I've known him for 25 plus years, and he is now going to the Society of St. Pius X service that's held in a hotel here in Austin, and he keeps sending me information. And I know that they are currently out, and it's at least to some degree outside the church. And I wanted to see what were some things I might be able to, points I could make to him, information, a book, whatever I could give to him that might help.
Okay. I would recommend that you go to Father John Zulsdorf's blog, and it's, if you have a pen handy, I'll give you the URL.
I do.
Okay, so it's what does the prayer really say? But you just want the first letters. So WDTPRS.com. So think of the phrase, what does the prayer really say? And then just use the first letters, WDTPRS.com. When you get there, just search for SSPX, and all of the articles that he's written about that topic will come up. And he does a very good job, I believe. He's not a member of the SSPX. I think he has a lot of sympathy for them. But he also recognizes the serious problems that beset them, including not being in, I don't even know if this is a proper canonical term, but they're not in, their unity with the church is ambiguous. And in some way, they are, you might say, imperfectly united with the church. They don't accept the authority of the local territorial bishops, for example, the ordinaries of dioceses. So in Austin, I don't remember off the top of my head who the Bishop of Austin is, but they don't recognize his authority over them. So they're operating in a, you know, sort of a guerrilla manner. And I'm using the term in a political or warfare sense. They're operating outside of the visible confines of the church. So that leads to questions like, well, can you go to Mass there and fulfill your Sunday obligation? Can you receive Holy Communion? Are there confessions and weddings and things? Are those valid? And so this is where Father John Zulsdorf is very helpful, because he has a lot of detailed knowledge about those matters. And so he explains it in everyday language that you can easily, you know, find out. So that's in terms of a resource, that's probably the best one going, if you ask me. Father John Zulsdorf's a great guy. He goes by the handle Father Z, and he's a good guy. I know him personally, and so I find him to be a trustworthy source of commentary on this issue. Now, I don't necessarily follow as far as he goes in terms of sympathy for the SSPX. I myself, I will admit, I am sympathetic to some of their goals and some of their concerns about things that have happened in the church since Vatican II, no doubt about it. But I myself would never attend a Society of St. Pius X Mass. I would never go into that community, not because I don't like the people. I'm sure they're wonderful people. But it is not in communion with the church in some sense, and it's ambiguous. And I don't think even the canon lawyers fully know what to make of it. It's new and different in the life of the church. But the other reason, for my part, is that movement is in many ways very hostile to the church. They call it often the conciliar church, or they have epithets that they use. They, in my experience and talking to people and kind of getting it firsthand, it seems to be an awful lot of contempt for Catholics like me who don't go to the SSPX. We're not, in their minds, maybe we're not really Catholic, or we're just conciliar Catholics, or we're just, you know, there's always some asterisk. So there's a lot of opprobrium and a lot of contempt and disparagement, and that's not healthy, if you ask me. That's not true. That's not what a person who truly wants to become a saint, if you ask me, that would not be part of how that person should operate. So since I really do want to become a saint, and I encourage other people to do the same thing, for me, it's not helpful or beneficial to be in an environment where there's constant looking down on other people in a spirit of criticism and a spirit of condemnation. I don't want that. Don't need that. So for my part, that's one reason why I would never go in that direction. And I don't encourage people to go in that direction either. But as Father John Zulsdorf points out, very even-handedly, that there are some situations where if you had no other choice and you had to make your Sunday obligation, that you could. I don't recommend it, but it could be done. So I think I just would like to hand you off to him, because he can take you much further and give you much more information on that.
My
blog.
Feelings are much the same as yours about there are things I have some sympathies towards them and their thoughts about changes that happened during in the name of Vatican II. Yeah. But I've always said in the past, you know, it's possible to step out of the church from the back door, and it's possible to think you're becoming holier and you step out of the church through the what you call the front door, because you're going to something higher. And yeah. I kind of struggle with, and would not go myself, but I just wanted to how to share some things with him. So this is right. This is excellent.
Good. Well, I can only take you so far, because I don't specialize in that area at all. I did co-author a book a long time ago about the SSPX. It's called More Catholic Than the Pope, but it's out of print. And it's so much has changed in the 20 years or so that have gone by since I co-authored that book that it's no longer really the same set of circumstances. You know, there's a new pope now. We've actually had two new popes in the meantime. What I would recommend, though, if you want something that will at least kind of frame this whole question within the context of what did the church say at the time, read the apostolic letter Ecclesia Dei, Ecclesia Dei, D-E-I. And this is written by Pope John Paul II in 1988, and it was his declaration of what, in fact, was what happened when Archbishop Lefebvre did what he did by doing this schismatic act. And Pope John Paul II refers to it as a schismatic act. And there were excommunications, and those have since been lifted. But if you want to see at the beginning what the problem was and what was the main issue, and this had to do with Archbishop Lefebvre consecrating four of his priests from the society to become bishops, because he knew he wouldn't be in this world that much longer, and he wanted to be able to perpetuate the SSPX. So against the express wishes of Pope John Paul II, he went forward and he did this, and thereby excommunicated himself, as were those four men excommunicated. So read that letter, And I think you'll find it very helpful, at least in understanding the bigger picture issues.
Excellent. Thank you, Patrick. And was really glad to hear about a month or so ago when you were speaking of your parents, that they're doing wonderful. I got to got to know them a little bit when they were here in Austin.
So wonderful.
It was wonderful
happy
to
about
hear that,
that
they were doing well.
Yeah. They are. Yeah. So I'm so happy they are. My dad will be 85 in a couple of months. He'll turn 85 years old. My mom is just turning 82. Happy birthday, Mom. And yeah, they're doing well. Thanks for that. Appreciate it, Jeff. And they listen to the program. So chances are they just heard what you said. And I'm sure that'll make them happy. We'll take a break and we'll come right back. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. If you want to send me an email, go to the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick. Click on Connect and you can send me an email there. I'll look forward to it. Be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio. Check it out.
Alles klar, Herr Kommissar. I always like the German version better. You know the English version of this song, Cyrus?
No.
The German version is superior.
What's the English version called?
I don't even remember. I don't remember. This is Falco. And I think After the Fire did the English version. But the Falco version is my favorite. Alles klar. All right, back to it. Pat in Trenton, New Jersey. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Pat. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to share something that I heard recently. It's kind of tugging at my heart. It was a couple of weeks ago. Okay. It was a priest named Chris Alar, his father Chris Alar. He's a Marian. And he did this amazing homily. It was on the Holy Angels. And I never knew how important it is to utilize our holy angels and how they aid, and they're only here to kind of help us in our salvation and help us to be saved, and how we should offer our communions to them, go to adoration and bring them along and offer them up to the Lord. It was really an amazing homily, and I never knew how important it was to call on our angels every day and to really talk to them.
Well, Pat, I don't know how often you listen, but I concur with your point. I do agree with you. But thankfully, this is a topic that I get into frequently, and I say the same thing. I'm not trying to compete with anybody, but just to say, if you listen to Relevant Radio long enough, you're going to hear a lot about that, a lot about devotion to the Holy Angels. There's also the Opus Angelorum website. It's a confraternity of Catholics who want to foster and deepen their relationship with the Holy Angels. That's what Opus Angelorum means. It means work of the angels. And so you've come to the right place if you want to hear more about angels, because we talk a lot about that here.
Oh, it was great. And an important thing that he mentioned from the mystics, that it was I think it called like a fun fact, I guess, but they said when the amount of human souls are saved equal the amount of falling angels from originally when the angels fell. When they equal the amount, that's when the end of time, that's when the end of the world will be here. I thought that was an interesting kind of fact.
Yeah, it's pure speculation, though. There's nothing in divine revelation that would support that. Yeah. Well, check it out, Pat. I appreciate it. I'm always happy to meet another Catholic who is into understanding the angels better. Yeah. St. Thomas Aquinas has a lengthy treatise on the angels in the Summa Theologiae. If you haven't read through that, it's well worth the effort to do so. And I really do recommend that if you haven't seen the website for Opus Angelorum, go there and check it out. I believe it's opusangelorum.org, if I'm not mistaken. But it's a confraternity that fosters love and devotion for these ministering servants of the Lord. So I think you'll find that helpful. Thank you, Pat. Nice chatting with you. Let's go to Estelle. I'm sorry, Estelita in Chicago. Good morning.
Good morning. It's Estelita. Okay. I would like to thank you very much for all of the things that you have done and said to help us all understand our religion better. Two things I need, but the first is my neighbor has a habit of digging into the Bible in the morning when she wakes up, but by the midday, she is out looking for dope. She's doing both at the same time.
Okay.
And I find that very disturbing.
Okay.
I need a book. I need an author.
Well, okay. A book and an author for what exactly?
To give to her so that she understands the wrong thing she's doing.
Well, okay. I think if you were to give her, if she, you say she's looking for dope, I presume it's marijuana. So maybe give her Jesse Romero's book about what's wrong with marijuana. His website is jesseromero.com. You can find it there if you want to take a look at it. And that might be a good book to give her.
What's wrong?
Sounds like we're listening to two different radio shows at the same time. Yeah, it's called What's Wrong with Marijuana, and the author is Jesse Romero. Good guy, and his website is jesseromero.com. Well, thank you, Estelita. Very nice to chat with you, and God bless you for being attentive to your neighbor. Let's go to Bianca now in Idaho. Hello, Bianca.
Hi, Patrick. So I'm calling today because I'm worried about my brother. I don't think his sacraments are valid.
Okay.
And exciting, he's getting married in the Catholic Church.
Okay.
What
makes you think his sacraments aren't valid, though?
Well, it's for reconciliation and First Holy Communion. And so he was about in his teens and... my mother had asked a priest to give him his first Holy Communion before my grandmother's funeral mass.
Okay.
And the priest said yes.
Yeah, but there's nothing valid or invalid about that.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, well, maybe we should process through this issue. So was there something about the mass that he celebrated that would lead you to think that it was invalid for some reason?
No.
So I'm not trying to badger you. I'm just trying to understand your point. What is it that makes you think that it was invalid for him to receive First Holy Communion?
Well, he didn't go through his classes, and he didn't complete his classes. So he didn't complete it in the formal way of going through reconciliation and First Holy Communion.
Well, I can put your mind at ease that it would be still valid. Those things have nothing to do with the validity of the sacrament. So it's ideal, it's optimal for a child to be properly prepared, and that's the way it's typically done. But if the priest gave him First Holy Communion, there's nothing invalid about it. It would be a valid First Holy Communion. In other words, think of it this way. His reception of Holy Communion, in terms of validity, is dependent upon whether the priest validly consecrated the host and the chalice of wine to become the precious blood at Mass. So as long as you have the valid form and matter, and that would be in the case of matter, it would be unleavened wheat bread and grape wine with a little admixture of water. And in the valid form, which would be the words of consecration that the priest speaks, and valid intention, so the priest intends to do this. It's not like if he's acting in a movie and he's portraying a priest celebrating Mass, that would not be invalid, or that would not be valid because he's not intending to consecrate the species. And furthermore, he himself would have to have been validly ordained as a priest. But assuming that all those things are present, then there's absolutely no question whatsoever that your brother received a valid Holy Communion.
Well, that's good news.
Yeah.
Stressed out for nothing then.
Yeah, I like to spread sunshine wherever I go. Just ask Cyrus.
That's wonderful. Yes. I heard this morning.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about it a little bit more then. So as far as his First Holy Communion is concerned, you don't have to worry about that. If he went to confession at some point before or after that and made a good confession, if he had any mortal sins, then if he disclosed mm-hmm. those and was truly sorry and firm purpose of amendment and the priest gave him absolution, no problem with validity there. So you had said he's getting married. So was your concern that maybe he shouldn't or couldn't get married because you had thought mistakenly that his earlier sacraments not being valid would mean he couldn't get married? Was that what you were thinking?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I mean, I don't see any reason to have those concerns. And if he is being properly prepared for the sacrament of holy matrimony, that's great. So is he getting married in the church?
Yes.
Fantastic. Sounds like it's going to be a wonderful day.
Yes.
Well, did I help, Bianca? Did I get to the heart of the question?
You did. And I think, I'll just let him know, hey, my husband and I had our marriage convalidated.
Okay.
In the church. We did not do it the right way the first time around. Mm-hmm. And so maybe I'll just talk to him about, reconciliation and what we did. And just, hopefully that's part of his preparation as well, too, as he's getting ready to get married.
Yeah, I think it's wonderful that he's getting married in the church. I mean, so many people, as you know, nowadays don't. They just flout the church's law on this issue. They ignore it. They go their own way. And lots of problems ensue. So it's always a happy thing when a family has a member getting married and doing it the way the church asks, because everybody can be there and celebrate.
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy for you.
Thank you, Patrick. I appreciate it. And
you're welcome.
Just to let you know, you've been wonderful. I was not catechized the right way. And so we started listening to your show in 2019 when my husband and I came back to the faith. And so thank you for all the knowledge and the help.
My great pleasure indeed. My honor to be able to do this. I'm so grateful to God that he lets me do what I do on the show. So the fact that it's helping you makes me happy too. Thanks, Bianca.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye. I always love when people let us know how Relevant Radio is helping them. And not that we have to have it, but it's always nice because, you're standing in a studio for 3 hours talking into a microphone. I can't see you. I've met many of you. And I visualize you as I think about you and I'm talking to you. And when I say you, I mean you. Yeah, you. So it's always nice when you circle back, as a certain Jen Psaki would say, and let us know how it's helping you. Feel free to do that. If you ever want to just say, you want to call in and just share, here's how Relevant Radio helped you. We're all ears. So give us a call, 888-914-9149. And that goes for all of our programs, not just mine, of course. 888-914-9149. Let's go over now to, let's go to Donna in Osage Beach, Missouri. Good morning, Donna.
Good morning. Thank you so much. My husband passed away October 1st, and his mother passed away on October 5th. So it's been a tough 6 weeks. But what I'm trying to thank you. So am I. I'm looking for ideas or thoughts or resources, because I'd really like to change the course of my path as far as either doing mission work or working in a, Relevant Radio, or there's other options too, as far as like Catholic work.
Yeah.
I'm really feeling a need or a pull to do something like that. Do you have any thoughts or resources I can turn to?
A couple things come to my mind. What a generous thing that you're thinking about, Donna. That's wonderful. Well, one thing that we do have here at Relevant Radio are people all around the country, very generous people who are our parish ambassadors. And so they're active in their parish, or in more than one parish even, in helping to raise awareness about Relevant Radio and the programming and how it helps people. And so it's something that many other Catholics around the country are doing, but there's always room for more. And if you're interested, I would say go to the, if you're interested in that, in finding out more about that, just go to the relevantradio.com website. And I want to pull up exactly where the page is so I can tell you where to go to find the information. So under support, in the navigation bar at the top of the page, you'll see giving options, plan giving, and you'll see ambassador program. So the ambassador program, that page will tell you all about how you could, if you wanted to do this, how you could donate some time and energy to help people by listening to Relevant Radio. We supply you with free materials. We make sure you have all the promotional materials that you would need. And we give you guidance on how you can do this in concert with your pastor so that he approves of it and all that. So that's one thing that comes to mind. And we have parish ambassadors in other parts of the world even. I'm looking at the map. We have some in France and Germany and Spain and all around the country. So you can actually see like little push pins, but it's not a red push pin. It's a cross, like a little cross. And you can see where people are located and maybe even find people who might be near you. So that's one thing. Another thing that comes to mind would be religious orders. Now, I don't know if you have any interest in becoming a religious sister. You could investigate. There are congregations of religious sisters that do accept vocations later in life, widows, for example. But even if you didn't go into religious life, you might find a religious order that's drivable from where you live, and perhaps you could cook in their kitchen, or you could help with the chores around the convent. I mean, they're always happy to have people to help them. So that might be one way that you could put your work to that kind of use. Let me keep thinking about that, Donna. Maybe start with those two, and then let's pick it up again if you call me back in another week or so, and I may have some other ideas for you. Thank you. God bless you, and my condolences. May your husband rest in peace. I'll be right back.
You can join the conversation by calling 888-914-9149.